This is Brock and Saul.
Brock Heward and Marcus. Sorry about just
Mike.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
You were not exactly Joe Cap there in the pocket.
Presented by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
As you hear that growl, I can't help but think of what the Cougs accomplished yesterday, and they really do deserve a lot of credit. What a crazy story it is, right? We talked a little bit about it. I wish Brock was here today to kind of go through, you know, his thoughts on it, because whenever we talk about sort of the historical element of it, he, you know, I don't know that I know of any non-Coug who feels worse about what's happened and feels more like that organization, that group of people got screwed in this whole thing more than Brock does. He's been passionate about it. He's been adamant about it every time it comes up. He hates the way this Pac-12 thing has gone down and the way it's affected specifically Washington State and Oregon State, two programs who have largely done it right and ended up, unfortunately, the two odd programs out of the entire thing that's gone on here over the course of the last few years. But with all of that staring them in the face, for a basketball program that really had gone nowhere over the course of the last two decades, to not only make a run at the Pac-12 title, ultimately fell short, but to make the tournament for the first time in forever, and then to go out, and they were not favored, if I read the numbers yesterday, right? Drake, despite being the 10 seed, was actually favored.
Slight favorite, 1.5 points.
Yeah, so it was close, but still, give them the call. They were the favorite, maybe because they were playing closer to home, maybe because the Pac-12, just it wasn't a very good year for the Pac-12. I don't know exactly why. I'm not going to pretend like I'm some sort of a Vegas bookmaker when it comes to college hoops. I didn't watch a game all year, but they go out and as the underdog win that game yesterday, and they're fun. I admit that's the first time I've watched them yesterday. I had not watched them all year. I don't think I've watched a men's college basketball game all year. I've watched a bunch of Caitlin Clark games. I've actually watched a couple of Stanford women's games. I have not watched a men's hoops game until yesterday.
They've had such a good year. I've watched some of their games. I really like their defense.
They got some fun players. I like that they basically start a guard and four forwards. Like, I like that sort of, hey, we're going to go big. We're going to be different. We're going to make it a little bit awkward for a lot of the teams that just want to run up and down the court. And they do it a little bit differently. And that Jones dude, Ike Jones, like, he's built a little bit differently. As Brock would say, he's high cut, right? Long legs, sort of an awkward body, but athletic and gets to the rim and gets, you know, gets rebounds, puts them back up and uses his body really well. I thought he was a lot of fun to watch.
Well, they were making their free throws. A big downfall for Drake last night.
Oh, yeah. Brutal.
What were they, 6 for 14?
Yeah, you can't do that and hope to win in the tournament. Obviously, free throws are such a huge thing. But, you know, and then at the center of all of it at the end is this freshman who comes off the bench. And it's Slick Watt's kid, right? And, you know.
Grandkid?
Is it grandkid?
I think it's grandkid.
Excuse me, maybe it's grandkid. Regardless, it probably is grandkid. That probably makes more sense from a... I'm not willing to accept that that's a reality.
72 years old.
I'm not really willing to accept that that's a reality, that it could be his grandkid. So you'll have to figure out whether it's his kid or his grandkid. I just know he's in the Slick Watts family. And
I'll confirm.
Please confirm, because I don't want to get that one wrong. Let's be accurate about that. But, you know, for a kid to grow up in West Seattle and a Husky legacy, et cetera, to be out at Wazoo, doing that and hitting that huge shot while the Huskies have been, you know, really, really bad here for the course of the last 5 years or so, didn't make the tournament, have largely been ignored and forgotten in the Seattle sports scene because they've been surpassed. I had somebody who was giving me grief on the text line yesterday saying, hey, Salk, you never, ever watched the Huskies, never liked them, never liked college basketball. I'm like, well, you're wrong. You just haven't been listening long enough. If you go back to the annals of this show, used to love it. Used to go to the games, especially like the Pondexter, Isaiah Thomas. I mean, I still remember, you know, random dudes from those teams, Scott Scruggs and a bunch of other little shooters they had on the outside, right? Vinoy Overton, despite all of his, you know, off-court issues, etc. Like, they had some dudes. They were really fun. We spent a lot of time watching them. Holiday when I first got here, and then eventually Abdul Gaddy, and everything seemed like after that seemed to just kind of fall apart as they got worse and worse and worse. And then they started playing the kind of hero ball where they would get like one or two dudes who were going to be top 10 NBA picks, but it just didn't, they didn't play as a collective team anymore. And it felt like everything fell apart. And then eventually it was time for Romar to go and Hopkins came in. And within a year or two, it just wasn't a conversation anymore. I stopped being interested, like most of Seattle, because they weren't putting out a product that was worthy of our interest. So kudos to the Cougs. They captured a little stitch in time here where the Seahawks are active in free agency, but certainly not making big splash moves that are going to move the needle for the casual fan. And the Mariners are coming off of a brutal end of last season that pissed off a huge portion of their fan base. And while those people that have really focused on it and paid attention may feel as if, okay, you know, despite some of the problems, they've actually done a pretty good job and they're getting excited now for this team and what it's going to look like and the length of the lineup, et cetera, there's still a large block of people that just aren't interested right now and don't want to pay attention to what the Mariners are doing. Wake me up when they actually, you know, are in the playoffs and prove to be a pretty good team. So with that and the Seahawks stuff, and the Huskies in turmoil, both in the basketball program and the football team has now changed over, and the athletic director is going to change over, there's been a little hole. There's been a little opportunity. And the Cougs have absolutely taken advantage of it, and now I'm paying attention, which is great. I don't think I'm alone. Maybe I am. Maybe I'm the only one. Maybe everybody else has been paying attention to it every day all year. If you're not a Coug, I'd be surprised. Are there some Cougs that watch every game? Of course. Yeah, as you should. Passionate about your program. I love it. But for sort of the general sports population here in Seattle, yeah, it was a little eye-opening. And if yesterday was the first game you watched of that team, just like it was for me, I loved it. All right, Isaiah is Slick's grandson, Donald's son. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Okay, good. Mm-hmm. The announcers did say son yesterday. Okay, good. That's what I heard. Okay, that makes more sense.
So that was your first game. Are you going to watch the second?
Yes.
You going to watch Saturday?
Well, what time is it?
3:10.
No.
That was a quick cut.
Well, I've got a lot going on Saturday. It's not that I don't want to. Darn it. See, that stinks.
Yeah, because Iowa State.
I mean, you could tape it.
I mean, I'm probably not going to do that, but I appreciate the thought. Like, yes, I could. I'm probably not going to. I got a lot going on. I got auctions to go to on Saturday. I got to drop my kids off in Bainbridge. I got to, like, take the ferry across and then back and then pick up my wife. Like, I'm running around on Saturday.
You want to go Supercross with me?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't.
Did
I mean,
you guys
I would.
See the call
no.
in this Kansas game? Can we talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, I did see it. More you. There are two other quick stories to get to. That one and this other. Yeah. So yes, the call in the Kansas game. Explain what happened.
So first of all, they blew. I think they were up by like 22 points at one point. They blew that. It comes down to with 20 seconds left, Samford is down 4 points.
Yep.
They hit a 3-pointer, so Kansas is up just 90-89. And they have a guard actually named Nicholas Timberlake.
Nice.
Or not. I've never heard of any other Timberlakes except for Justin. So he goes up for a shot, and Samford's A.J. Stratton-McCray has almost a perfect block. It's all ball. And
yep.
But Timberlake falls on his back, and it looks bad, so they call a foul.
Lame. It is, look, I was saying at 6 o'clock that that basketball has drifted largely away from being something that I'm interested in general. A huge part of the reason why is that the refereeing is so bad that it makes the game often unwatchable for me. It is so up in the air, like, do they call it a foul? Do they call it a block? Do they call it a charge? Do they call nothing? And there's no consistency to it whatsoever, and I find it to be such a turnoff and so aggravating that often I'll just be like, yeah, I don't care enough to watch this. And I never say that about any other sport. Umpires have never caused me to turn off a game. Refs in football never caused me to turn off the game. Mm-hmm. Hockey, never. Mm-hmm. Something about the way the game is refereed in basketball just drives me insane. I just stop watching. Like, I'm out. I don't like that. One other, is it sketchy, though? Are people thinking it's sketchy or just a bad call?
Just a wrong call.
Okay.
Yeah, but there's been some outrage on social media. Because, I mean, then he makes those free throws and
they
Samford
go on
wasn't
win.
Able to score after. So, yeah.
Kansas was protected by the refs once again.
That would have been a big upset, though.
The one other story from yesterday was the Steve Alford comments. So Steve Alford's now, one's at Michigan, right? Now he's the Nevada head coach. And they lost. Huge collapse. 17 points. They were up to Dayton. They end up losing. And he cracked a joke afterwards that was like, Whoa, listen to this.
I wish this wasn't the first time I've been on the wrong side of blowing a huge lead late in a March situation, but here we are again. What did we get outscored at the end? 24-4, something like that. I feel bad for our players, but I can't go on the court and do it for them. I don't know if it was fatigue, lack of focus after we were up 17. Maybe they were distracted, finding out my interpreter has been embezzling from me. Hard to say, but I'm not an excuse guy.
Just, I'm a comedian, though. I am a comedian.
I got to tell you, I don't know a lot about the story or what's going on with Steve Alford at Nevada. Jeez. If I was athletic director, I'd fire him today.
It's like, come on.
You can't have your leader of college kids blaming the kids in that situation.
Blame the kids, then say you don't make excuses and then make some weird Ohtani interpreter joke.
But whatever. Is it any different from Troy Dannon a couple of days ago saying, I loved it here, never moved my family? I mean, like, these. If you're involved in college athletics, there's a decent chance when you open your mouth, you're lying. So I don't even really know what to say about all of that at this point. We'll take a quick break. Come back with everything you need to know, including Justin's roommate going yard again. You'll hear the sound coming up next on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Go Cougs, go Cougs, go Cougs. Heck of a return to the NCAA tournament for Washington State as they beat Drake last night in Omaha. Isaac Jones leading the way with 20 points, but it was the freshman, Isaiah Watts, grandson of Slick, who had the biggest moments of the night.
But the wing players are not looking to make a play.
Good! Isaiah Watts!
That was a huge three. Put them up for the final time with just under 2 minutes left to play in the game. He came up with another steal and two more free throws down the stretch to help ice this game. Great, great win for the Cougs.
4 seconds left. Washington State, for the first time since 2008, has won an NCAA tournament game as they knock off Drake 66-61.
It was a really fun, really well-played game as well. So kudos to them. Kyle Smith, their head coach, proud of his guys.
I was really proud of him. We got down 8. We kept chipping away. We've kind of been that way all year. I got all the respect in the world. Drake's probably the toughest team we played. They were so physical and tough, and we made plays when we needed to.
Yeah, that's well said. They were a physical team, and the Cougs were even more physical. Good on them. Gonzaga, ready to play. They blew the doors off of McNeese State yesterday. They will now draw Kansas. And then the big upset of the day, 14-seeded Oakland taking down Kentucky, thanks to 10 three-pointers from the new tournament hero, Jack Golkey. I'm sure all eyes will be on him tomorrow as well. That is one short of the single game record in the tournament of 11. Women's tournament starts today. Angel Reese and LSU this afternoon. Caitlin Clark and Iowa will play tomorrow.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Now the set and the 0-2 on the way to Cal. Swinging a drive deep to right center field. Going back, and this one is gone. Goodbye, baseball. Line shot. Onto the berm in right center. Cal Raleigh with his fourth home run of the spring. And it's now the Mariners 3 and the Reds 2.
Fourth home run of the spring for Cal. It feels like his 40th home run of the spring. He has just been on a torrid pace. And it was cool to see basically big league lineup last night for the Mariners. It looked like this. JP, Julio, Polanco, 1-2-3, 4-5-6 were Garver, Cal, and then Haniger, and then Raleigh 7th. Dylan Moore was playing first yesterday because Ty France was spending a little extra time with his wife, who is due to give birth shortly. And then Luis Rojas playing third and batting 9th. That could very well be, with France in for Moore, your opening day lineup. Maybe it'll be Canzone instead of Raleigh, but that's probably your opening day lineup and probably even in that order. So kind of cool to see them go out and score 3 runs early. I am curious what the breakdown will look like at third base and in the outfield, right? If Mitch Haniger is going to be healthy and they're going to play him a bunch, what does it look like with Canzone and Raleigh? What does it look like at third with Rojas and Urias? I would think that Rojas probably gets a little bit of an extra shot early just because of the familiarity, because he was here last year, but definitely interested in how all of that goes. Ryan Bliss added a home run later. Scott Servais on the youngster.
Yeah, he did. Ryan's had a good camp. You know, he can do some things offensively. Still a few things to work on, but he's versatile. You know, he's handled what we've thrown at him there. But he does, for a little guy, he does have some bat speed. He can put a charge in one once in a while.
Some things to work on tells me that Ryan probably needs to improve the defense a little bit if he would like a call-up to the major leagues anytime soon.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, just trying to add to where we're at on the Shohei Ohtani and his translator story. On Thursday, a source close to Ohtani told ESPN that the reason the story changed from Tuesday night to Wednesday morning was this. Quote, as Ohtani's handlers tried to determine what had happened, they initially relied solely on Mizuhara, who continued to translate for Ohtani. So I think they're trying to suggest there that either they were relying on the guy who was actually the perpetrator, or he was translating incorrectly on purpose. Now, he denies that, was told he told ESPN, no, I have never translated anything incorrectly on purpose. But yeah, super confusing. Tisha Thompson, who joined us yesterday from ESPN, explains how all of this started to come together from Shohei's perspective.
Ohtani, who he's not fluent in English, is my understanding. I've gotten that from lots and lots of people. But he's now been in the United States long enough where he can piece together enough words. And he was sitting there and he thought something didn't sound right. And after the meeting concludes, there's meetings, another interpreter is brought in. Ohtani, according to these two sources close to Ohtani's camp, say this is when he learned that there were any bank transfers and when he discovered that money was missing in his bank account. So the next thing we know is there is a statement that comes from the lawyers alleging massive theft. They don't name who did it. They just say authorities will be contacted.
So it wasn't until another translator was brought in that Ohtani even knew what was happening. I got to tell you, that's a hard story to believe. It's hard for me to believe it. Not saying it's wrong, but I'm telling you, it's very difficult for me to believe that that's the way this all went down. That's everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show. I did just run into G. Scott out in the hall. He will be in at 8:30. I know he wants to talk about where the Huskies are at. That's something important to him today, and I was on his show yesterday. He was quite passionate about it, so you may want to stick around for that coming up at 8:30.
Not a chance.
I know. It's true. It's very true, especially when it comes to college athletics. G will sometimes have a little passion, so looking forward to it. Maybe passion and warfare. Steve Vai style coming up at 8:30.
Steve Vai reference.
You like that? You never know when you might get one around here, Justin.
Big fan.
Let me remind everybody, opening day right around the corner. We want to send one of you and three of your friends to the game. But all you got to do is open the Seattle Sports app to try to win this. Click the Win tab and find out how. If you don't already have the app, here's how you get it. Text the word app, APP, to 866-979-3776. And we'll just send you a link to download it right now. Don't miss out on your chance to join the fun on opening day. This contest runs through Sunday, March 24th. All right, Wyman and Bob have been killing the John Schneider interview every Thursday afternoon. We still have a few more weeks of it before the draft here in about a month. Yesterday, once again, some fascinating conversation with John Schneider. And I think, A, he told them something that confirms what I truly did believe took place. And then he maybe unfortunately said something that was going to back up something Brock said as well. I don't like that one as much. That's next on Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario? Hey, yo, Bo knows this word and Bo knows that word, but Bo don't know Jack, because Bo can't rap. So what do you know? The day dog is first up to bat. No batteries included and no strings attached. No holds barred. No time for mo faking. I got to get the loot so I can bring home the bacon. The brothers front. They say the tribe can't flow, but we've been known to do the impossible like Broadway Joe. So sleep if we want. My crew will help you get your Z's, troop. But here's the real scoop.
Wow.
I'm all that and then some. Short talk and handsome bust up inside
okay.
the eye to show okay. you where I come from. I'm vexed, fuming. I've had it up to here. My days of pain, dues are over. Acknowledgery is in there. Yeah. Head for the border, go get a taco. I be wrecking from the jump street, meaning from the get-go. Sit back, relax, and let yourself go.
What?
Don't sweat what you heard, but act like you know. Yes, yes, y'all. Yes, y'all. Who's got the vibe? It's the tribe, y'all.
Tribe, y'all.
Alive, y'all. Come alive, y'all. Inside, outside, come yeah, around.
I thought you just do the first verse. You know
who's
the whole
that
song.
Brown? Some may I say, call me Charlie.
Okay,
the words is and a beat the Bob Marley. Okay, you want to be done? Be done. Sorry.
It's impressive, but
it just yeah. jumped out to me.
I'm
sorry.
It's great radio.
Well, it might be. Depends who you ask. Depends who you
How
ask.
How many people were singing along?
I don't know. I would imagine a
I
lot
know
of people
most
my age.
Most of the words to that song, but I don't know if I could have done it all the way through the way.
Yeah, I've done it too many times. That's like the official anthem of my college friend group. So yeah, thanks. That was fun. Anyway,
I mean, it's know this.
That's true. That's true.
Justin.
That of course is Maura singing Creed, which we'll save for another
hit.
Day. All right, John Schneider on yesterday with Wyman and Bob. Another great interview, and I got three or four things I want to play from you, for you from that, starting with the Sam Howell story. So this confirms, I think, what I've believed from the get-go about why they acquired Sam Howell. So the question was, essentially, how did this change the way you feel about the quarterbacks in the upcoming draft? And here's what John Schneider answered.
No, not necessarily, but I will say post combine, you know, the first negotiating window weekend when Drew went to the Giants, that mm-hmm. There was a level of, okay, this guy threw the ball great, that guy threw the ball great, you know, he's like, okay, well, that team needs a quarterback, that team needs a quarterback, that team needs a quarterback, we need a backup quarterback, like, we need to get on this thing, and we got on it and hung in there, and, you know, we were one of four teams that was in it, and, you know, Adam Peters, I give him a lot of credit, like, he hung with us.
So when I hear that part from John where he says, okay, we lost Drew Locke, and we're going, okay, that team needs a quarterback, that team needs a quarterback, that team needs a quarterback, I don't know if he's referring to backup quarterbacks. But what I heard from it, and maybe it's sort of because it's what I wanted to hear, because what I've always thought is, hey, all of these teams in front of us in the draft need a quarterback. They didn't get Drew Locke. They didn't get Sam Howell. They're going to need to draft somebody. And if we want to get one of the top four, maybe even five quarterbacks in this draft, we're going to have to come up so far to get them that we're going to have to give up so much in terms of resources that we're not going to get it done. We're not going to get past Minnesota, who has more than we do. We're not going to get past Denver. We're not going to get past a few other quarterback needy teams. And so I better go and do what I need to do to get Sam Howell, who is younger than a couple of the quarterbacks who are in this draft class. Yet he's already made, 18 starts in the NFL, who does have some talent, who I did like when he was in college, speaking as John Schneider. And so let's go do this. And I do believe that, yes, the signing of Drew Locke did partially necessitate this, but even more so, the realization after talking to people and figuring out where the rest of the league was at, that he just probably wasn't going to get and certainly couldn't count on getting one of the top quarterbacks in the draft. So what do? You go get Sam Howell. You end the dream of J.J. McCarthy or one of the other young quarterbacks in this draft and say, I'm going to have to live to fight another day, but I do need a young quarterback and I do need a significant backup. And Justin, you were showing me the backup quarterback ranking somebody put together the other day.
I mean, some of it, not quite.
And they had Sam Howell number two.
Yeah.
Right behind Justin Fields. So yeah, good. I mean, that's how you handle a situation like that. You pivot, you realize what's going on, you deal with reality, and you pivot. So good on John Schneider. This one surprised me, and if you listen to that Bump and Stacy promo, it sounds like it would surprise both Bump and Stacy as well. He was asked here about the possibility of bringing back Jamal Adams.
Yeah, I mean, that's how when we acquired him, that's what, you know, we were thinking. He was a will linebacker. Told you guys before he came in, was really productive. You know, injuries, what have you. Anyway, didn't work out. You know, and then, you know, the safety group right now is for some reason is a strong group. The market's, you know, there's a lot of guys that are highly qualified. Obviously, you know, guys like Diggs and, you know, yeah, we keep tabs on those guys all the time. really happy for the guys that, you know, we discussed last week that went out in free agency, like Brooks, Bobby, those guys went, the linebackers went way faster than we thought they were going to. So based on previous history, so, you know, Colby Parkinson, you know, D. Lou, these guys, happy for them. You know, it again, at a certain point, you have to take emotion out of it and just focus on what's best for the organization and figure out where your stopping point is.
Okay, so a couple of things to address there. You know, how they consider bringing guys back. Yes, I like that they do that, and John does try to part his friends, or at least, as you know, on as good a terms as possible with everybody who walks out the door. The Jamal Adams one continues to kind of surprise me, that Brock brought it up and that he does seem to be open to it for a bunch of different reasons. Now, going all the way back, John says when they initially acquired him. So this was way back when they first traded for him. If I hear that right, John says they wanted him to be a Will linebacker from the get-go. I didn't realize that. I know that there became a bit of a, you know, kind of back and forth with the coaching staff over how he should be used in the last year or two, but I was unaware that that was like their original plan was for him to be the Will linebacker. I'm not sure I realized that.
I mean, if that's true, the only way you can read into it is that Pete refused just said that,
no,
right?
Yeah, she's like, yeah, we're not doing that. And I don't know what that looks like. He didn't play a lot of Will linebacker while he was here. Could he come in and be a back? I mean, because essentially, wouldn't you be asking him to be the backup? Because I'll play this other sound here. It sounds like Jerome Baker is going to be the Will linebacker. He talks through here why Baker was signed and sort of where Baker and what's the other guy's name are going to be the two linebackers and
Dodson.
Dodson, thank you. How they're going to be used.
Jerome, since the day he was released, really met with his agent down at the combine, and we're kind of presenting our case, and you know, we think it would be a great spot for him. Both guys have worn the dot, called the defense. You know, Jerome right now would be the Will, Dodson would be the Mike, is the way the coaches are seeing this. And you know, Baker's worn the dot. He can fly. We really liked him in college. He's just a run and hit guy. He's had a lot of production, a lot of sack production too. So the one thing that stands out about him is his range. He can really fly around the field, and Dodson as well, both in coverage, and we're trying to get big up front and get really strong down the middle of our defense, and then try to build from there.
All right, well, does adding Jamal Adams as a Will linebacker do that? Maybe it does in passing situations, but it sounds like they've kind of gone out and got guys who already do that. Jamal Adams as a backup sounds funky, right? Just kind of given what he's been in his career. I don't know. I think that ultimately I am with both Bump and Stacy, who I listened to on that promo, say that it just feels like a bad culture fit. And I was sort of under the impression that the reasons for moving on from Jamal were a bunch of different things. Obviously, the money being number one on that list, but that ultimately the productivity and the culture fit were not perfect. And maybe moving him to Will linebacker salvages all of that. And if you get him on a cheap enough deal, you do it. But I don't know. It just, something about that doesn't smell right to me. I would probably not be in favor of that.
Maybe this is a question you can't answer, but it's more of an observation that is come into more focus now that Pete is out of the building. We've heard some of these comments.
Yeah.
Is when those two are together, which one is the more philosophical, I can fix this person versus I like what this person does on paper, what I saw with my eyes, and what he did in college, right? So how do you combine those two when it's Pete and John of, I hear what you're saying and the paper does say this, but here's what I think I can do with it and find the happy medium versus what's happening now? Because it sounds like now almost everybody we've looked at has been PFF darling.
Right. Yeah. I don't know how to answer that question. It's a good question. I'm not sure I know how to answer it, but let me answer a slightly different question, but still sort of on the same idea. The more I listen to some of these, the more I'm not convinced Pete and John were always on the same page.
Right.
Right? I mean, like, this to me sounds like a very...
No one's ever really on the same page all the time.
Yeah, but it was hidden.
They did a really good job of making it look lockstep.
Yeah. I think that the outward view of it was always, hey, these two guys, they're always getting along. They're always in lockstep. You know, they agree on everything.
And they're back in their wheelhouse.
Right. They find a way together to work through it. But when I hear we acquired this guy, all those, I mean, John is very sensitive about Jamal Adams, right? We heard him now a couple of times bring it up to Wyman and Bob about sort of, hey, this is the way it was supposed to be versus this is the way it played out. And I'm not saying he's blaming Pete Carroll or his staff. I don't think I hear blame. I think I just hear like, hey, we acquired him to do this and it didn't go down that way. And we think that if he had done the thing we wanted him to do, it might have gone differently. He might have been a more productive player. Maybe, you know, maybe we wouldn't be having some of these conversations about Jamal Adams and how poorly it went for him here. So, yeah, that to me shows that there was some fracture there or some divergence in their opinion. Does it mean that they constantly were fighting? No, of course not. I don't mean that. But if there was that fissure and we didn't know about it then and are just finding out about it now, how many more like that were there? Probably many, because two people over the course of 15 years are going to disagree a lot. Just naturally. They did a great job of hiding it. They did a great job of keeping up a public face. Hugely impressive that they were able to do that. But now I think John is like, no, we're going to do it my way. And if Jamal Adams is here, he's going to be a Will linebacker. That's I'm going to mandate it. Because the coaching staff reports to me.
Yeah.
The part I don't understand is, do they think he would have stayed healthier at Will linebacker? Because to me, that was the biggest issue.
I don't know.
It's not like his body's going to be less in harm's way. In fact, he's probably going to be
great question
tackling more.
And now you're 3 or 4 years down the road as well. Yeah, I'm just probably against this. The way things ended last year, I think I would move on. One more thing I want to get to. Brock's going to join us for Blue 88 here in just 2 minutes. So before he does, let me just play you one other cut from Schneider. And this is on the draft and sort of the question of best available versus need. Here's what John said about that this year.
And free agency as well. It's not, you know, when you're talking about, you know, there's a cutoff. Like, okay, are we overpaying this guy? Are we not offering this player enough? Is he just going to choose another team based on our offer if we're coming in too low? Or, you know, it's just that's a whole evaluating player and the position and how much need and all that. But you can't overdraft and you can't underdraft. You can't overpay and you can't underpay.
Does that all make sense to you? Now I get it. He went on to say, and I was reading some of this, essentially that they do take need into consideration on how highly they have somebody rated. So essentially, if I read it correctly, and I was reading this at clsports.com, that's part of the evaluation process, right? Is the need. Is, you know, how do they fit here on our team? So that when they put a grade on somebody, that's part of it. And, you know, good question by Bob, essentially saying like, hey, if there was another cornerback that was the best player available at number 16, would you take him? And I think we all hope the answer to that is no. I would view that maybe slightly different than need. I think I would call that fit, right? Like, is that really something that fits on your roster? No, it's probably not a great fit or value for the team at this point. So does need factor in? Yeah, I guess you can call it need. But I think it's almost more fit at that point. And yeah, I do think that they'll be drafting sort of a combination of need and best available. And hopefully those two things will come together and you end up with the Seahawks doing what they've hopefully tried to do here more in the last couple of years, which is fix some of the drafting problems they've had, get back to the basics, and start turning over the talent level on this team. What I think is most important, rather than, you know, whether it's a fit on the roster, is do they play a position that has enough value in today's NFL? That's the key for me, and hopefully that's something the Seahawks can do a better job with. Let's do some Blue 88.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Heward breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Morning, Salk. You doing well?
Any
doing
news
well
in your world? Anything you want to get off your chest before we ask you some football questions?
Oh, no. Nothing's happening with the Hewards. No. All good.
Okay.
All good.
Wanted to check in, make sure everything's good.
It's one of the most emotional days we've had as a family in a long time yesterday, but all good. Just this crazy world of college athletics, man, where the portal is open in every which way. And, you know, trying to figure things out, but all is good in the process.
Is that something you want to talk about? Do you want to mention what's going on or no?
Oh, I think there'll be time. Sure. Yep. I think there'll be time in the days ahead. And this may see, has entered the portal, and now we'll kind of have to figure life out. And for all the screaming and punching at the air that I do over this portal, I do realize that it goes both ways. And, you know, when programs go into that thing and block certain opportunities, then you've got to, you too have to entertain those things. So, yeah, so we're in that process, and, you know, just a lot of relationships, a lot of people. That's what you realize about life. And so many of these decisions are not black and white and easy. And yet you grow from all of them. So that is what the Huard family's got going on. And I got another 12 hours in the car today to listen to the station and listen to, you know, John Schneider recaps and everything else. So I'm good to go.
I love it. All right. Well, let's ask you three good football questions, and we're rooting for Macy. I can tell you that. Starting with this one, John Schneider, who you just mentioned, has been repeating himself when he talks to Bob and Dave. What's he repeating himself about?
I think the last 3 weeks, I may be wrong on this. I know for sure the last two, but I think it's last three. We've heard the term, he's a green dot guy. Yep, he's a green dot guy. Do you know what a green dot is?
I do.
Green dot is on the defensive player's helmet that represents that player that's got the old headset by his jaw pad. So he's communicating and he's calling the plays on the defensive side of the ball. And oftentimes, like Bobby Wagner, it's just the middle linebacker, the quarterback of the defense. And then other times, it can be other linebackers. It can be Rayshon Jenkins, the safety in Jacksonville. It can be different players. And you've heard John talk about that with a number of the players they've signed. And what that speaks to me, Salk, is in the first year of a new system, you better have dudes that understand ball. Mm. You better have guys also in Mike McDonald's system, maybe a little different than the previous regime of 14 years, that can understand the why, understand the details, understand the route combinations and everything that goes into playing elite defense and better defense rather than just playing coverages. So that has resonated with me, and it may be a little bit of an indicator as well of what we're going to see in this draft a month from now. You're going to have high football IQ, high football acumen guys, especially on this defensive side of the ball, with a new, young, energetic staff bringing a lot of new games.
All right, question number two. Well, Sean McVay seems to have become kind of the gold standard in scheming and everything else in the NFL these days. How can Mike McDonald be like him?
Salk, have you listened to the Playmakers podcast?
I think you know I don't listen to any podcasts.
Okay. Well, yeah, you and I often are a year or two behind some things at times. We're trying to be dads and husbands and everything else. But this Playmakers podcast, it's an athletic podcast, and it's McVay, it's Shanahan, it's McDaniel, it's LeFleur. They're all buddies in Washington. And the folks that put it together have done an awesome job with it. And I know a lot of my peers and a lot of coaches listen to it. And I couldn't help, as they were going through, and I listened to three or four of them yesterday on this drive, I couldn't help but think of why people connected McDonald's with McVay. Being the equivalent, right? That's what we heard. Oh, my gosh, this guy. And when you listen to the whole interview and you listen to the Rams people and you listen to how he turned that thing so fast there, Salt, I think there's two things that McDonald can do to be McVay. Number one, and you hear John say this, be a disruptor. Be a disruptor. And not just because of your age, but be a disruptor constantly in that building of, we don't just do this because we've always done it. We don't just play this defense because we've always played it. We are going to disrupt, and we're going to innovate, and we're going to challenge one another. I mean, to listen to this podcast, you could have been a fly on the wall in those Washington years. It was amazing how much McDaniel and Shanahan and LeFleur went at each other's throats and how competitive it was. And McVay and who could, you know, remember 52 formations in a row? Who could call every one of the pass plays and concept? Who could take apart that? Like, that's what you're going to need on the defensive side, on the whole building. Just kind of that disruptive, competitive, borderline combative environment to get to the next level of evolution defensively. So I think that, and then number two, don't be afraid to fail. Your first time head coach, and McVay was even younger when he was at the Rams, and he was like, it was great. I didn't even know what failure was. Like, I'm just going into this thing and attacking this thing. And for, I hope, Mike McDonald and a young staff, it's the same thing. Like, why would we be afraid to fail? Like, the opportunity opportunity we're getting as young people to do and live out our dreams. Let's just go attack this thing and play some great kind of football.
All right, question number three. All the football world, Brock, all eyes on one place. Where is it today?
Ann Arbor, Michigan. Michigan's pro day today. Those 18 dudes that were at the combine will be joined by other guys from Michigan and the surrounding areas that were not. And while I'm kind of still deeply intrigued by J.J. McCarthy, especially what he'll run and jump and do all that, I believe, kind of like you, Salk, that ship has sailed, and dude's probably going to go in the top 10. And Sam Howell is here, so we can kind of end that QB narrative. What will not end are a number of other Wolverines that I think fit beautifully right here in Seattle. And there are two guards in particular. Zach Zinter is the name we talk about because he's your boy from BB&A, coming off a tibia, fibula, broken leg.
Go
and
Knights.
still won't be working out, but maybe one of those situations where he drops in the drafts because of it, and you sit there in the third round, and, you know, he may be sitting there. His peer on the other side, Trevor Keegan, is another 6'5", 315-pound, just road-grading, tough guard. And both those guys, would I want them with the Seattle Seahawks tomorrow? You bet I would. I think they would both be fits here. I'll come back to one last thing John Schneider said, and this has not changed, but he said it just a couple weeks ago to Bob and Dave, and that is, it's not cool to be an O-lineman. Right? A lot of these guys, it's last in the supply chain because I want to be a D-lineman. I want to be everything else. I don't want to be an O-lineman. Those two guys, you know what they want to be, Salk? O-lineman. And Keegan in particular wears this, like, cowboy collar. Dude's got swag. Dude's got long and length, 6'5". Dude is powerful, broad shoulder. Like, no, I'm an O-lineman. And by the way, I'm a two-time Joe Moore Award-winning lineman and a national champion. And bring just some of that swag instead of some of that defeated, woe is me, I got to be a lineman. Those two guys in particular are a little drippy, about as drippy as O-line can be.
I love it. All right, that is today's Blue 88. Did you get to watch any of the Cougs last night?
I got to watch zero of the Cougs last night, other than on my phone app. And yeah, man, what a gritty battle! Awesome. Yeah,
it's a really good game.
Awesome. Do you see how much the old Pac-12 is made for the Pac-2? By the way,
I do. I saw that. Yeah, for every win, Oregon State and Washington State split all of the money. It's like $1 million each, right? Or
I think they're like at $16 million right now. Like,
it's amazing.
Keep winning and you could fund the department. You could keep Kyle around, like, you know, not just you, but come on. Well, I don't know if I can say come on, Oregon, but come on, Pac-2, Pac-12, Big Ten, whatever you are.
Pretty crazy.
Wherever you're going to end up, keep finding ways to win because it's going to line some of the much, much needed bottom lines over there in Pullman and Corvallis.
Wow, pretty crazy. All right, good stuff. Well, we miss you today. Looking forward to kind of getting back to normal on Monday. It'll be opening week next week as we get ready for opening day on Thursday night. And, great stuff. Kudos to Macy. We support her 100%, and we want her happiness to be top priority. So we're excited.
Appreciate that, Salky. We will also be starting our prospects towards the draft. We'll do one of those a day for the next 4 weeks. Started Monday, and then text toy. Let me know the one food item that you think on a 12-hour road trip is the must.
Yeah, I would say probably a double Mitch Witch.
A double Mitch Witch. Yeah. Not familiar with the double.
Well,
that's
going to be new at T-Mobile. It's named for the two Mitches. Each
it's
has a side.
Can talk about
the
last two days.
You got
the Mitch Garver
the
side, Brock, which is basically a Cuban sandwich, and then the Mitch Haniger side, which is sort of a grilled chicken with fried avocado. So, it's a double. It's a double Mitch Witch. Yeah.
Double Mitch Witch. Okay, good to know.
Yeah, get right on that.
All right.
See you, buddy.
See you,
there we go. Brock
will
be back on Monday. We'll be back in just a moment. And I am going to talk a little baseball leading into opening day. I got a question that I threw out there last night, and I'm curious your answer. We'll dig into it next. Brock and Salk, Sales Sports on 710salesports.com.